What if I told you that the key to revolutionizing how we treat severe depression isn't actually found in a therapist's office, but, in tracking the exact way a laboratory mouse twitches its head?
I mean, it sounds totally bizarre, right? But it's actually cutting-edge science.
It really is. So, welcome to today's deep dive. For you listening, we know you love a rapid, thorough influx of knowledge, without getting completely bogged down in all the dense medical jargon.
Exactly. We want to give you those aha moments.
Right. And today we have a stack of four brand new review articles from the 2026 Annual Reviews Journals. And our overarching mission today, the whole theme, is exploring this era of extreme precision in modern medicine.
Yeah, because we are really moving away from the old blunt instruments of the past.
We really are. So, just to outline the path today, we're going to cover these four articles clearly and separately, one right after the other. We'll look at the core research question, the methodology, the key findings, and, the real-world practical implications for each.
Sounds like a solid plan.
Yeah. And to kick things off, precision medicine isn't just for genes. It's actually unraveling the mysteries of the mind. Which brings us to our first article.
Right. This is from the Annual Review of Pharmacology and Toxicology. It's called Biased Signaling in Psychedelic Action.
The research question here is wild. They're basically asking which specific signaling mechanisms in the brain give you the long-term therapeutic effects of psychedelics, like treating psychiatric disorders or pain.
And crucially, can we separate those healing effects from the adverse hallucinatory effects?
Right. Can we get the cure without the intense hours-long trip?
Exactly. Because, I mean, clinically, a full hallucinogenic trip requires so much supervision. It's expensive, it's exhausting, and it's not safe for everyone.
So how do they even study that? I mean, methodology-wise, you can't exactly ask a mouse what kind of colors it's seeing.
No, you definitely can't. So researchers reviewed structural studies and used these things called biased agonist tool compounds. But the real fascinating part is the in vivo animal models. They specifically track the mouse head twitch response, a head twitch.
Yeah, it's this very specific, rapid side-to-side head twitch. Decades of research show it's a highly reliable behavioral proxy for a hallucination. So if the mouse twitches, it's tripping.
Wow.
And the authors actually draw direct historical parallels to how researchers used to study opioid receptors. Separating the pain relief from the dangerous side effects like tolerance.
Okay, let's unpack this because from what I understand about the key findings, it all comes down to the serotonin 5-HT2A receptor.
Right, that's the critical switch in the brain.
But it sounds like the serotonin receptor is a smart bulb, not a light switch. You don't just turn it on, you can change the color. And if we find the exact right color, we get the healing without the hallucination.
That is a brilliant analogy, yes. It's not just on or off. Drugs with different structural diversities force that massive receptor protein into different shapes, or what scientists call conformations.
Conformations, got it.
Right, and this creates biased signaling. So if the receptor twists into one specific shape, the signal travels down a therapeutic pathway, triggering, like neuroplasticity.
Exactly. It triggers neuroplasticity, rewiring the brain without activating the parallel pathways that cause a hallucinogenic trip or psychosis.
That is just incredible. So the practical implications here are huge. We are on the verge of designing non-hallucinogenic psychedelic-derived drugs.
Yes. Patients could get rapid acting relief for depression or PTSD or even cluster headaches, all without needing to undergo an intense supervised psychiatric trip.
Just take a pill and get the brain benefit.
Precisely. It's extreme precision at the receptor level.
Which is a perfect pivot, because just as we're mapping the hidden pathways inside a single brain receptor, we're also tearing up the old maps of diseases we thought we understood perfectly, like cancer.
Yes. Our second article shifts from the brain to the blood. It's called Genomic Taxonomy of Aggressive B-Cell Lymphoid Neoplasms from the Annual Review of Pathology, Mechanisms of Disease.
And the research question here is really about categorization, right? How can the medical community better categorize this highly heterogeneous group of aggressive B-cell lymphomas to actually improve patient survival and, treatment choices?
Right, because historically, the methodology was just looking at tumor cell morphology under a microscope. Basically, what does the cell look like?
Like grouping things by shape.
Exactly. But for this review, the authors synthesized 25 years of deep genomic characterizations, molecular profiling, and targeted DNA sequencing. They moved entirely away from the microscope.
And what were the key findings? Because the old system had, what, over 20 categories?
Yeah, over 20. But the biggest bucket was diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, or DLBCL. It affected about 70 to 74% of patients.
Wow, that's a huge chunk.
It is. But deep genomic profiling revealed that DLBCL was actually a massive catch-all diagnosis. It was wildly heterogeneous.
Meaning the cancers in that bucket were totally different from each other.
Exactly. They were driven by entirely different biological hallmarks and mutations like MYC and BCL2 rearrangements.
Wait, if we take one disease and chop it into 100 microscopic genetic subcategories, doesn't that make the doctor's job infinitely harder, not easier?
It sounds like it would, right? Burying them in data. But creating a genomics-informed taxonomy is actually why this matters so much.
How so?
Well, historically, we treated that massive catch-all bucket with blunt, toxic, one-size-fits-all chemotherapy. You just poison the body and hope the cancer dies first.
Right. A sledgehammer approach.
Exactly. But now, this specific genomic profiling tells the doctor exactly what the cancer's weakness is. It allows them to stop using that blunt chemotherapy and directly guide specific, targeted immunochemotherapies.
So they can hit the exact genetic flaw.
Yes, it turns a guessing game into a targeted strike.
That's amazing. And, you know, leaving behind that one-size-fits-all medicine is definitely a recurring theme today. Which brings us to our third article. Because this one tackles a massive biological variable that medicine has historically totally oversimplified.
Oh, absolutely. Biological sex.
Right. So we're looking at novel advances in our understanding of sex-dependent control of blood pressure from the Annual Review of Physiology.
A super important topic.
Yeah. And the core research question here is, what are the exact physiological mechanisms that cause premenopausal females to naturally maintain lower blood pressure than males?
And the methodology to figure this out is fascinating. They reviewed lifelong clinical data trajectories, but they also used highly specific animal models, specifically the four-core genotype model, or FCG.
So what does this all mean? If I'm understanding the four-core genotype model, they are literally separating the effect of having XX or XY chromosomes from the effect of having estrogen or testosterone.
Yes, that is exactly it. They engineered mice to untangle the chromosomes from the hormones.
That is a brilliantly elegant way to study biology.
It really is. And they looked at various physiological systems, from the kidneys to the microbiome.
And the key findings, right? Because obviously the blood pressure gap is real.
It's very real. It's evident from puberty straight through to menopause. And they found it's driven by this massive web of factors. For females, it involves the G-protein-coupled estrogen receptor, or GPER.
Which relaxes the blood vessels, right?
Exactly. Plus, females have higher levels of the anti-aging protein Clotho, which keeps arteries from stiffening.
Okay, but I also read about this olfactory receptor 558, a smell receptor in the kidney.
Yeah, biology is weird like that. It literally detects specific chemical signatures in the blood and regulates sodium excretion. And its activity is entirely sex dependent.
That is wild. So what about men? Why is their baseline pressure higher?
Well, men naturally have higher baseline sympathetic nerve activity.
Fight or flight response.
Right. Their nervous system runs a bit hotter. And they experience greater oxidative stress early in life, which damages blood vessels.
So the practical implications here, hypertension management desperately needs to be sex specific.
Oh, absolutely. Men and women have fundamental differences in systems like the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system, the RAAS plumbing system.
So a blood pressure medication that works perfectly for a 40-year-old man, it might target the completely wrong biological mechanism for a 40-year-old woman.
Exactly. We need to prescribe based on the actual physiological hardware, not just a broad symptom.
Man, the complexity is just astounding. But if untangling the blood pressure systems of half the human race is hard, our final topic shows that it's nothing compared to trying to target a single hypermutated microscopic protein.
Oh, yeah. The one that simply refuses to be caught.
Right. So our fourth article is Optimizing Karyes Therapeutics for Non-Small Cell Lung Cancer from the Annual Review of Medicine.
And the research question is basically the white whale of oncology. How can medical science overcome the immense challenges of targeting the KRAS mutation in lung cancer, especially when the cancer rapidly mutates to resist our best drugs?
So for methodology, the authors evaluated recent massive clinical trials, things like CodeBreaK 100 and Crystal 1 and 12. They were looking at specific covalent inhibitors.
And crucially, they analyzed the genomic landscapes of patients who developed acquired resistance to these therapies.
Okay, so the key findings here require a bit of backstory. For decades, this KRAS protein was notoriously undruggable.
Yeah, completely undruggable. Its surface was just too smooth. There were no pockets or grooves for a drug to bind to.
Here's where it gets really interesting. It's like KRAS was a smooth bowling ball we couldn't get a grip on. But scientists finally found one tiny microscopic scratch, the KRAS G12C mutation, to hold on to with these new drugs like sotorasib and adagrasib.
Yes. They used that tiny scratch to trap the protein in its inactive state, a huge breakthrough.
But the cancer's response is to just put a glove over the scratch and keep rolling.
That's a great way to put it. Acquired resistance is the major hurdle. The cancer fights back by developing secondary mutations. It changes the shape of the scratch.
Or just builds a detour, right?
Exactly. It bypasses the drug entirely by reactivating alternative signaling pathways, like the RAS-MEPK pathway. You block the main road, the cancer just takes the side streets.
So what are the practical implications? How do we fight a cancer that constantly shifts its escape routes?
The immediate future relies on combination strategies. You pair the KRAS inhibitors with immunotherapies to block the main road and the side streets at the same time.
Get it from all sides.
Right. But the holy grail they're working on right now is the rapid development of next-generation pan-KRA inhibitors.
Pan-KRAs, meaning they hit multiple targets.
Exactly. Drugs that can block multiple mutated forms of the protein at once, completely cutting off the cancer's escape routes before it can even use them.
Wow. It's just an incredible microscopic arms race.
It really is.
Well, let's pull all of this together, because synthesizing this journey we've been on today, this deep dive, really showed how medicine is permanently abandoning the blunt instruments of the past.
Absolutely.
I mean, we covered separating the therapeutic cure from the hallucination and psychedelics down to the shape of a single receptor.
We mapped the specific genetic flaws hiding inside what we thought was just one type of lymphoma.
Right. We rewired our understanding of male versus female blood pressure. And finally, we saw scientists cornering the slickest, most stubborn, undruggable protein in lung cancer.
It really is the era of extreme precision.
It is. And for you listening, we know you crave multiple perspectives and those deep aha moments. Yeah. And you are now armed with a real cross-disciplinary understanding of where the absolute bleeding edge of precision medicine currently sits in 2026.
It's an exciting time to be following this science.
It really is. And I want to leave you with a final kind of mind-bending thought inspired by all these sources.
Oh, I like these. Lay it on me.
Well, if we can now design drugs that only hit specific pathways of a single brain receptor, and if we are categorizing diseases purely by their unique genetic fingerprints, rather than what organ they happen to be sitting in.
Mm-hmm.
Will the future of medicine even use broad terms like lung cancer or high blood pressure?
That's a really good point.
Or will you just go to the doctor to have your personal momentary molecular state, you know, debugged and recoded exactly like a piece of software?
It's a quick molecular patch update.
Exactly. A patch update for your DNA. It's a crazy thought, but we're getting closer to it every day. Thanks for joining us, and keep diving deep.